Testing in House Chamber, Legislative Day 107.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The Sergeant at Arms will close the doors. Members and visitors are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Galliard. Members and visitors in the gallery will please stand for the prayer and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Representative Galliard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If we could bow our heads in a moment of silence and then for a moment of prayer. Our Father and our God, we thank you that you are a prayer-answering God and a covenant-keeping God. We thank you for the gift of prayer. Thank you for your word that teaches us that if we abide in you and your words abide in us, we can ask what we desire and we shall receive it. Thank you for the gift of your Holy Spirit that operates and gives us a spirit of goodwill and conscience. I pray for the leadership of our General Assembly, leadership of this House. I pray for the leadership of every committee and work group. I pray, God, for every man and woman that's gathered together in this place today. Give us wisdom, discernment, clarity, and direction. I pray, God, that we be mindful of every person that resides here in our state. Thank you for the sacrifices we make. I pray for our families, husbands, wives, children, grandchildren. I pray for good health. And I pray that you will put a holy bubble around everybody that's in this room, that no hurt, harm, or danger will come near anyone. Pray, God, for our support people as they continue to enable us to do the work we're doing. Now, God, give us clarity of our decision-making, that at the end of the day, you are well pleased. You will be glorified, and it will be good for people. So in the strong name of Jesus, we ask all of this. God's people together said, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for August 5th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Lewis moves the journal for August 5th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Members, our nurse of the day with us today is Jennifer Smith from Hempstead, also the wife of Representative Smith. Good to have you with us here again today, please. Calendar Senate Bill 681. Clerk will read. Also, Chair directs Rule 12D be suspended. Clerk, continue.
Senators Berger and Tillman, Senate Bill 681, a bill to be entitled an act to establish a rural health care stabilization program to give counties additional flexibility in regards to local option sales and use tax without increasing the existing maximum tax rate and to expand eligibility of utility account funds. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Representative McNeil of Randolph County, recognize the debate bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 681 does three things. Part one establishes a non-reverting revolving loan fund to provide low-interest loans for the support of hospitals located in rural areas that are in financial crisis. The hospital stabilization plan would be approved by UNC Health, a loan approved by the local government commission, and the loan administered by UNC Health. Part two provides counties with the flexibility to lever by referendum a quarter cent sales tax as long as the total overall rate does not exceed the current maximum rate allowed for that county. And part three extends the counties eligible for grants from the utility count from the 80 most distressed counties under the tier system to the 87 most. The bill supported by the North Carolina Healthcare Association, the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, locally is supported by Randolph County Commissioners, the Board of Randolph Health, and the Randolph CEO. It passed the Senate 42-1 and has passed finance and rules in the House. I would appreciate your positive support.
Lady from Randolph, Representative Hurley, recognize debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to y'all today about our hospital in Randolph and other rural hospitals who need this bill. This is a possible tool in the toolbox to help struggling rural hospitals. It is not the perfect answer to the problem, but it could help some hospitals. And I want you to know it is a loan. It is not a grant. Randolph Health is the only hospital in Randolph County and is located in Asheboro, my hometown. Asheboro is the home of our North Carolina Zoo that welcomes thousands of visitors each day. And should an emergency occur, without Randolph Health, help would at least be 30 minutes away. I want you to think about that. Also, Randolph County has two of the state's mega sites. The presence of a hospital in the county would greatly enhance the chance of their being selected as for an industry. Our citizens in Randolph County, as well as our visitors, need Randolph Health to continue to serve the community. Many ideas have been discussed to address ways to help solve this problem. After several months of discussion, this is the bill that was negotiated by the stakeholders as a possible solution. Senate Bill 681 is for any rural hospital that qualifies as and is approved. We do not know if Randolph Health will be selected. What we do know is that our hospital will probably close without this bill's passing. The funds will not be used unless the borrower is approved and assures the funds will be paid back. I want you to put yourself in our place. And we didn't know about this until a few months ago. If I could have won the lottery, maybe, I would have not brought this to y'all. But we are down to this today. And I implore you to vote yes to give hospitals an opportunity to continue their service to our communities. I appreciate this. And please, if you can vote green, I really would appreciate it for our community. Thank you.
For our purpose, gentleman from Wake, Representative Jackson Rice.
I speak on the bill.
Gentleman has four.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a lot of empathy for the plight of the hospital in Randolph County and the health care needs of the citizens there. The closing of this hospital would be truly a matter of life and death. I think the bill sponsors are both right in seeking some relief to save their local hospital. But we have health care issues of life and death all across North Carolina. You see it in our infant mortality statistics and the financial struggles of our rural hospitals and with issues of access to mental health care and preventative care. Senate Bill 681 is well-intentioned, but we are taking up the wrong bill on today's calendar if we want to address these larger life and death problems. I want to read you a provision from the bill summary. Quote, "The number of rural hospitals struggling with financial sustainability has increased nationally over the last 10 years. The University of North Carolina's Rural Health Research Program tracks closure of rural hospitals across the country. From 2010 to 2018, there are six states with five or more rural hospital closures. North Carolina saw five closures," end quote. It probably won't surprise you to know that one thing that these states all had in common, the failure to accept Medicaid expansion. I'm not sure $20 million in guaranteed loans will do anything to solve Randolph Hospital's long-term problems. I believe that distressed hospitals such as these, particularly those potentially entering into bankruptcy, normally would be very hesitant to borrow money in the nature of a loan. That's not the case here, where I think everyone involved recognizes that the hospital at issue will never pay back this loan. What we are doing is giving a loan that the citizens of Randolph County will be paying back over 20 years through a guarantee, through property taxes and other types of local taxes. They are apparently willing to do that because it's their only choice that they have to save their hospital. But folks, it is not our only choice. Like it or not, they need a grant or forgiveness of the loan under certain conditions. We in this body have the power to do that. We also could pass a bill that would greatly help with the amount of uncompensated care that this and other hospitals provide every day across this state. Since we are not willing to have that debate, to do anything to address our statewide issues, I will vote no today on this bill, but hope we will have that debate very near in the future. I'm a no vote even though I like part two of the bill. It extends sales tax flexibility to 94 counties that currently do not have it. That allows local leaders and local voters in those 94 counties to raise their taxes to pay for important purposes like teacher supplements. My county has that right, and I think your county should too. I wish that wasn't a part of this bill, but it is. Today I'll be voting no. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question before the House. Passage of Senate Bill 681 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Blackwell, aye. Saying aye. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 75 have voted in the affirmative, 37 in the negative. Senate Bill 681 passed the second reading. Will without objection. Actually, strike that. That is a roll call bill, so it'll remain on the calendar. Senate Bill 230, the clerk will read.
Representatives Davis, Brown, and Ballard, Senate Bill 230, a bill to be entitled NC Military and Veteran Act of 2019, the General Assembly of North Carolina Acts.
Gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Soka, recognize and debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're extremely fortunate for those who serve our country and our armed forces. And to keep North Carolina remaining a military-friendly state, we bring this bill before you. Basically, in summary, it allows time for military members to spend more time with their dependents before and after deployments. It directs PED to study the impact of occupational licensing. Directs local departments of social services to report information to military personnel as requested by Department of Defense. Couples the state and federal definition of a child for the purpose of our wartime scholarships and removes some statutory references to extend the in-state tuition rate of covered individuals required by federal law. There's basically six parts. Part six is just the effective date. Three of these parts we've already voted on in here and by unanimous The first part one is a change. This came from the Senate. They voted unanimously for it. It authorizes school principals to approve a minimum of two excused absences each academic year for military dependents to spend with their parents before and after deploying to combat zones or overseas deployments. It's a very stressful time in a family, military family's life when dad or mom are deploying. They're not knowing if they're ever going to see him again, or they're certainly not going to see him for months at a time. And coming home, it's that joy. So I think that's a good part of the bill. Part two is the direction to the PED to study occupational licensing of military-trained applicants and spouses. This was House Bill 902, passed 114-0. This was Representative Grange and Representative Bell's bill. Part three was House Bill 274 by Representative Grange, Potts, and White. Passed this body 115-0. Part four extends the Class 1 and Class 4 wartime scholarships by coupling the state and federal definitions of a dependent child for the purpose of eligibility determination. This passed the Senate unanimously 47-0. Part five passed this body 118-0. That was contained in House Bill 111, the Supplemental Appropriations Act. And what that does is it syncs up state law with new federal guidance and definition on veterans attending universities. So we've seen three-fifths of the bill before. The other two-fifths of the bill are make sense. There's no fiscal impact on any of these. I ask for your green vote.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question before the House. Passage of Senate Bill 230 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock machine record the vote. 115 having voted in the affirmative, none the negative. Senate Bill 230 passes at second reading. Bill without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina Annexed.
For what purpose, gentleman from Guilford? Representative Brotman Rice.
Can I be marked as aye on Senate Bill 681?
Gentleman be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 681. Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 230 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 230 having passed its third reading, sort of returned to the Senate. Senate Bill 458, Clerk will read.
Senators Brown, Jackson, and Bergen, Senate Bill 458, a bill to be entitled an act to designate Post-Traumatic Stress Injury Awareness Day for North Carolina, establishing the Joint Legislative Task Force of Sudden Cardiac Arrest and Students, Athletes, addressing parental consent and the disposition of fetal remains and authorized engagement of third-party toxicology laboratories to guide resources. Johnstown, North Carolina, next.
Gentleman from McDowell, Representative Dobson is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this bill passed health and rules unanimously. Has three parts. Part one designates Post-Traumatic Stress Injury Awareness Day as June 27th. That was the original bill that came to us from the Senate. In addition to that, it had an amendment added by Senator McKissick to establish the Joint Legislative Task Force on Sudden Cardiac Arrest in Student Athletes. Part three is basically Titus's law that we've passed out of this chamber already. It requires in every instance of unintended fetal death resulting from accidental injury, stillbirth, or miscarriage, consent from the mother before disposing of the fetal remains. If the mother is unable to give consent, the consent from the father before disposing of the remains. If both parents are unable to give consent within 7 days, then the fetal remains are to be disposed of in accordance with applicable laws and regulations. Again, we've passed that out of this chamber already. And part four was added in a PCS before rules, authorizing HHS, DOJ, local health departments, and local law enforcement to engage with third-party toxicology laboratories for the purpose of guiding the delivery of drug treatment and law enforcement resources. This is a consensus bill. Again, it's passed out of rules and health, and I appreciate your support on the floor today. Thank you.
For what purpose, the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, rise.
To speak on the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. I rise to ask for support for this bill from one segment of it, a perspective that we have all voted for since, if you've been here, since 2015. In 2015, we had a bill called Sudden Cardiac Arrest Education for Students. It took in student athletes in consideration there. That bill passed out of the House 115-0, and it went to the Senate and stayed. In 2017, we had myself, along with Representative Lewis and Representative Brendan Jones, the Chain of Survival Task Force. It dealt with student athletes also, with AEDs placed in our schools, within our parks and rec facilities. That bill passed out of here 118-1, and it went to the Senate. So I am really thrilled that we have yet again an opportunity for us to address this real issue among our student athletes. I've heard about several since 2015 when we started down this road of addressing that issue with student athletes and sudden cardiac arrest. And we haven't been able to do anything. We have an opportunity here. It's coming to us from the Senate that we can move this forward, because I know I've heard from so many people and coaches and teachers and parents that we have an issue there. So I ask your support. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 458 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock machine record the vote. 108 having voted in the affirmative, 6 in the negative. Senate Bill 458. Pass the second reading. Will without objection be read third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 458 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 458, having passed third reading, sort of returned to the Senate. Senate Bill 295, the clerk will read.
Senator Tillman, Senate Bill 295, a bill to the Entitlement Act to make various changes to local standards of student conduct and to require the Department of Public Instruction to develop a plan of employment for teachers with the North Carolina Virtual Public Schools and report to the Joint Legislative Education Oversight Committee. General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Members, we're going to dispose of the amendments first on the bill. So Representative Torbett is recognized to send forth Amendment ABE 60. Clerk will read.
Representative Torbett moves to amend the bill on page 2, line 47, by writing the word lines to read.
Gentlemen, recognize to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, this is just for clarity. It's a date changes.
It moves to amend a bill on page 2, line 47 by rewriting the line to read, instruction shall report on the plan of the Joint Legislative Education Oversight Committee no later than October 15th of 2019. And on page 2, lines 50 and 51, by rewriting those lines to read that the act is effective when it becomes law. Section 1 of this act applies beginning with 2020-2021. And as amended by this act, shall apply material changes to policies existing on July 1, 2020, or new policies adopted on or after July 1 of 2020. Move for adoption, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question before the House. The adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock machine, record the vote. 112, having voted in the affirmative, one in the negative. The amendment's adopted. Representative Elmore recognized, send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Elmore moves to amend the bill on page 2, line 49.
The gentleman's recognized, debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment is a date change in the section that is dealing with the North Carolina public virtual charter school fix that we are trying to deal with right now with the employees. We had a stakeholder meeting that literally got over just before session started, and out of that meeting they recommended moving this date to June 14th, 2020 in case if there has to be some sort of calendar adjustment needed. So I would appreciate your support on the amendment.
Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, recognized, debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also would move for adoption of the amendment.
Question for the House, the adoption of Amendment A2. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed to vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk, clock machine, record the vote. 113, having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. The amendment's adopted. Representative Reeves, recognized, send forth an amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Reeves moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 8, by rewriting that line to read.
Gentleman's recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this is just a purely technical amendment. It was something that was actually caught by staff in the discussion we were having about the bill. This is a friendly amendment supported by the bill sponsor, and we'd appreciate your by vote.
Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank both gentlemen for their amendments, but also move for adoption.
Question before the House, adoption of Amendment A3. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock machine, record the vote. 113, having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. The amendment's adopted. For what purpose, gentleman from Haywood, Representative Queen Rise?
To be recorded as an aye on the Amendment 1 to Senate Bill 295.
Gentleman will be so recorded. Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, recognized, debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the House, for years and years, well over 20, 25, 30 years, we've been hearing throughout education that we want to encourage and just absolutely just wish we had more parental involvement. We can't legislate that. But what we can do is provide access and hopefully improve upon how we get parents to be involved. I believe this bill does that, along with addressing some disciplinary actions within the school to perhaps get some folks that might be just leaning towards the wrong direction back on the right direction. Excuse me. What this bill would do, it would require LBAs to consult with teachers, school-based administrators, parents, and local law enforcement agencies when adopting policies related to school student conduct, pulling everybody at the table to find out what the rules to move forward would be, including parents. Require LBAs to review current federal guidance prior to adopting discipline policies. Oftentimes, boards and commissions get together and meet, and they just don't review what the feds have already mandated, and so they end up having to go back and correct or put something in policy that really goes against or directly opposite of federal policy. So we're making them look first, ask questions second. Require LBAs to send more the most current discipline policies to the Department of Public Instruction each year by September 1. This is just so the Department of Public Instruction can keep an ongoing record and make sure that all schools have acted as supposed to. Remove the statutory examples deemed to not be serious violations of the LBA's Code of Student Conduct. This one seems to have the most arousal by folks, but it's clearly, and once we get into the discussion or the questions about this, I can fully explain, and I think everyone here would agree that we could move forward on that. authorize LBAs to require students and parents of guardians to sign an acknowledgement that they received a copy of disciplinary policies, procedures, or rules. We all know what that does. Encourage school officials to inform parents or guardians before responding to disciplinary violations and clarify that state law does not regulate the LBAs, and I apologize, LBAs is a local board of education, discretion to devise, impose, or enforce personal appearance codes. I'd appreciate a green vote. I stand for any questions, Mr. Speaker.
What purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Alexander, arise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to the gentleman from Mecklenburg?
Absolutely, Mr. Speaker.
He yields.
Is it true that under this bill it would be possible for a student to get a long-term suspension for a dress code violation?
It would be possible for a student to get a long-term suspension for a dress code violation based on the outcomes of the principal of the school. A one-time, probably not, but if reaction is they don't take care of the issues or they repeat or just disregard the school, then this allows a higher or greater degree of disciplinary action to accommodate that. If you could, let me use it in a reference to using foul language, for example. If someone inadvertently used a bad word, one, unfortunately, even though today is considered to be norm, it shouldn't be, but let's say it is, then that would not be a reason for long-term expansion or suspension. But let's say that was brought to their attention and they consisted to use that word or constantly use that word and brought it back and actually got more people to continue to say that word, and that became sort of, I guess, in the teacher's area or in their zone, past their safety zone. Then when someone, that would actually just be using bad language, but it went to a different or a higher degree, that would give the teacher or the authority to the school to provide a long-term suspension for that type of action, although he actually never did anything except use foul language. And the foul language in this original language said that they could not get a long-term suspension. So an occasional use of a bad word or occasional violation of dress code would not be a need for long-term suspension determined locally, but the ongoing continuing practice that the not willing to correct one's poor disciplinary action could lead to a long-term suspension. I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Speaker, to debate on the bill?
The gentleman from Mecklenburg has the floor and may debate the bill.
I appreciate the bill sponsor's response to my question, but I do want to raise the flag that we are perhaps venturing into an area with long-term suspension on something as open to interpretation as dress that we might want to be very careful about. I know that in a number of circumstances, you have some cultural differences as to what constitutes acceptable dress. You have some stylistic differences. We come up with conflicts all the time between interpretations of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, what constitutes free speech and what does not, these issues about T-shirts that have certain slogans on them, where one person says that I'm exercising my First Amendment rights to free speech, and you have somebody else that says, no, you're inciting something by what it says on that T-shirt. And it gets to be a quagmire if we aren't careful. Sometimes a suspension may be warranted, but a long-term suspension circles back and takes a person out of the educational environment. And we all argue all the time about how folk need to be educated. And by taking them out of that environment and benching them, we are contributing to
their inability to learn, while, you know, it seems like it's just overkill. And because of that, at this point, I'm having a hard time deciding to vote for this measure. And I would urge everybody to just carefully think about the implications of what's in that disciplinary section. It reminds me of the title of a World War II movie, A Bridge Too Far.
What purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Moria, rise?
Thank you. To debate the bill.
The lady has the floor. May debate the bill.
Members, I'm worried about this bill because I think it's taking us a step backwards from where this body went in 2011 with unanimous votes. We're trying to avoid school-to-prison pipeline. What this bill does, and I think what Representative Torbett was stating, we're removing language that we put in to protect minor offenses from resulting in school suspensions. And as a judge in juvenile court, early in the 2000s, I used to watch kids coming into court for delinquent petitions because they were suspended for truancy. They were suspended for throwing a pencil. They were suspended for the clothes they were wearing. 2011, we stopped that. We started to get away from that. And we have to remember, any time we are suspending kids in elementary school, middle school, they are getting further behind in their education. They're usually at home unsupervised. And we are not dealing appropriately trying to help them with the issues for their education. So I think by removing this language about what constitutes serious behavior, we are going to see increases in suspensions. And we all know minority students, students of color, are 3 to 4 more times likely to receive suspensions, as well as kids with disabilities. So I encourage you to vote no. Thank you.
What purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, arise?
Ask the bill sponsor a question.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to the gentleman from Durham?
Gratefully, Mr. Speaker.
He yields.
Thank you. I'd like to ask if any of the members of the disability community were consulted as this bill was coming together. As you, we all received communication today about what this potentially means for students who have intellectual and developmental disabilities and their abilities to respond to commands, to do what potentially may be seen as disrespectful to an educator or to an administrator. And I want to make sure that as we're thinking about these things, that we're taking those into account. And this particular issue is something that is not an urban issue or a rural issue. It's a North Carolina issue. We have students in every county, in every school district that are in that community. And I want to make sure that we're thinking about those things as we move forward with legislation like this.
Thank you for the question. Actually, just a very few hours ago, a lady from that group came to speak to me about this, about her concerns. And we have to also understand that the disabilities are federally mandated, so we could not go against anything that federally is mandated. So, yes, that is already covered under federal rules and regulations.
What purpose does the gentleman from Scotland, Representative Pierce, arise?
Ask the bill sponsor question.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to the gentleman from Scotland?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
I just wanted to ask a question. As in the local school boards, have they asked for this authority to be able to go a little bit further in the long-term suspension? I know my school system out of Scotland County, Hope County, have they, what, do you know if they're aware of this?
I'll try to address your question as the best I know
okay.
how.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, oftentimes the concern at the school board level is litigation or no litigation. And so if you were a teacher, I'll try to put yourself in these shoes or myself in the shoes. If you were a teacher and you had a student or two students or maybe even three students that were, we'll say, in your face using a foul word to you, at some point in time, you're going to feel somewhat out of your safety zone. Today, for fear of litigation, the only thing that they could do was not do a long-term suspension because the only thing that happened was the use of foul language. But by the sheer actions of the individual, it was much, much more than that. This bill would give the authority to the local school board to address this as a more serious issue, even though it is actually just use of foul language.
Follow-up question, please.
Would the gentleman yield to an additional question?
Absolutely, Mr. Yields. Speaker.
Excuse me for not reading the bill. Long-term suspension, what is that? Is that 360? Is that the whole year? 90 days? What's the time period when you use the term?
I'll yield to the locals, whatever they deemed appropriate.
What purpose does the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, arise?
To ask Representative Torbert a question.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to the gentleman from Caldwell?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
Representative Torbett, I get the sense that you'd like an opportunity to explain a little bit more in detail what this bill means. So would you give us a little bit more detail about what this bill is actually doing?
Thank you. Thank you for the question, because this isn't a bill that, unfortunately, in our times with the scales tilt one direction, like, say, use of foul language. We all know growing up, probably at least my age, that there wasn't a whole lot of foul language in schools, or you were pretty much handled. But that's sliding to the norm. And with the fear of the locals not having the right capability to address a disciplinary action at the local level because of potential for litigation or potential of other things that aren't spelled out in law, we're allowing that norm to shift even further away. What we're attempting to do here is just basically give them the authority and the ability to not fear litigation, but to be able to react and respond based on the degree of the infraction to the code. And the beautiful thing about it all, about the whole thing, is that the code that a person would be going against was determined by the parents, by the schools, by the law enforcement, and signed off to the students so everyone understood it. So when they crossed the line, if you would, they knew they had already crossed the line. So we're working collaboratively, developing the code, and then making sure people understand the code, and then provide disciplinary action to the people that are dealing with it day in and day out to address the code. Thank you for the question.
What purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, arise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Torbett, would the gentleman yield to a question?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
Thank you. So, Representative Torbett, you talked about the school board being given more discretion, and then I heard you talk about the principals being given more discretion. So, I guess I'm a little concerned. So, don't the school board already have some discretion, and the superintendent of the school system already have some discretion on what they do for those penalties or suspension or expulsion?
As I understand, as close as I possibly can, is that if I was a student and I chose to use a foul word, then they could not suspend me long term because that was the use of foul language. And they could talk to me and sit me down and you know, work in school and do extra whatever. I would say write your name 100 times, but they don't do that anymore. But that they're within a constrictive area of disciplinary action. But if I was that same student and I stayed in that teacher's face using that same foul word over and 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 over again, consistently to the point that it instilled fear onto that teacher or someone else within the school system, then a lawyer would look back at the law and say, the only thing we can really do is we cannot do a long-term suspension because all that student did was use foul language. So we're giving them, by their own determination about what the rules are going to be, the ability to address those types of circumstances.
Follow up.
Would the gentleman yield to an additional question?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
Thank you. Maybe I need to do the question in a different way. Currently, CMS system, superintendent, our school system already have policies in place with discretion of suspension, policies about expulsion. Is that not correct?
That is correct. Yes, yeah, correct.
Thank you. Speak to the bill.
The lady from Mecklenburg has the floor. May debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My concerns with this bill is that as disability rights, special needs children, lots of times when they show up, they may not dress themselves. Lots of times they may be very discoordinated, and lots of times their behavior may not be totally appropriate. And of course we have to abide by the guidelines of federal, but now we're looking at that we're going to give additional discretion to independent principals to make their judgment calls. And I don't see that as fair, because we all come from diverse paths, diversities, ethnic groups and whatever. And so it should not be up to the discretion of one individual to decide whether I'm appropriate that day. If it's already in the policy, if the guidelines are already written, if the school board already has presidents, as well as the school superintendent of that system, then why aren't we functioning by it? There's not going to always be a norm. There's always going to be a deviation from the norm. So I have an issue with dress code. That should never be when you have homeless children that are possibly showing up, and they may not have on what you think is appropriate. Their language may not be appropriate. And I would say we're missing a larger issue, such as community trauma, early childhood trauma. It's why some of these children show up the way that they do in society. So yes, some states have had to even look at whether a legislator can come in with braids in their hair. We're all being judgmental. And I think it should be left up to the discretion of the school board, the superintendent of that school, to set the guidelines and abide by them. And we don't need to be dipping and dabbing into allowing independent judgments to be made. I ask you to consider the bill. Thank you.
What purpose does the gentleman from Wilkes, Representative Elmore, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor. May debate the bill.
I want to talk about the section that's being discussed just a little bit, and then I want to talk about the end of the bill. What this does, and I appreciate this was added to another bill, which we actually took off of it, and it has dipped into education K-12, where a lot of these issues were discussed. It did not come out of the committee unanimously, but I believe there was only one or two folks against it. This language has been looked at by the School Boards Association, especially dealing with the principal piece that was just discussed, to where you don't have basically what I would call a rogue principal, a principal that is going to do what they're going to do against the policy. So this language is very balanced in dealing with that particular issue. Also, with the development of the localized plans, I doubt many of you have ever, you may have read your local system's discipline policy plan. You might have read it when your kid was in school, but you probably recently haven't read it, because currently there's no collection of these. I mean, they're not put together in one grouping. What this bill actually does is create a level of transparency where all these discipline plans will be submitted to DPI, where they can be reviewed. You can see if there's outliers in the discipline plans that are being submitted, that one particular LEA on a particular issues way out here, and all 114 others are not, to where you can see that in the actual policies. So even though it seems like there's a certain level of flexibility, with the flexibility is coming a higher level of transparency with this, to where we can actually analyze what is going on with the discipline plans across the state, to where we can see if there's problems or not. And dealing with a lot of the things with the Disability Act, it says that they're going to have to look at current federal recommendations dealing with the federal policy when they develop their policies. Also, the School Boards Association deals a lot with the school boards in the development of the policy, so you see a lot of consistencies with it. So actually, I think that you are getting something where we're going to know more at this level what's going on at the local level than we do currently, which is not a bad thing. I think that's actually a good thing. The second part of the bill is I had to run an amendment in rules, and I want to thank Representative Torbett for allowing me to run the amendment. It deals with the employees that are employed by the North Carolina Virtual Public School. And let me clarify this in the beginning because I don't want to confuse people. This has nothing to do with virtual charters. This is our virtual public school that has been run through DPI. And because of conflicts in the departments between the Office of Human Resource, State Board Interpretation, DPI Interpretation, et cetera, there's about 220 teachers that were given notice last week that they could no longer be employed. So what this second part of the bill does is takes the rule that they're citing and creates an exemption for those employees for this upcoming academic year. That's what my amendment did, to where the department itself can figure out what the classification of these employees need to be. May it be temporary, may it be a contract, to get all of those logistics worked out. From a legal perspective, we need to do this because it deals with the liability against the state. And plus two, it can allow those 220 teachers that were told last week that they would not have a job, that they can continue working. And we were told in a meeting, as I said, we had a meeting right before this, that they're activating classes Monday for school systems that have an early start date. So we have classes starting on Monday. Now, how does that, this is my biggest concern. I'm concerned about the employees, no doubt about it. But many times these classes are used by students at the high school to fill a gap in a class that's not offered. So they may have to take the calculus class through the DPI's virtual public school. Their schedules are already set at this point. So if they can't get that class, you're talking about kids that could be jeopardized with their graduation at this point. So I think this is a legislative move. It's not a political move. I mean, after the meeting that we just had, we need this legislative fix to limit the liability that is going to be to the state with this problem with the classification of employees, and also give the department, State Board of Education, Office of Human Resources, Temporary Solutions, time to figure out how to properly deal with these employees. So, you know, at the end of session, there's bills that the trains go over, the trains come back, and there's only a certain number of trains that are going, and that's the reason why it's in this bill. So I think a lot of the fear that has been brought up with the discipline part of the bill, I think it's a little bit more fear than anything else, and concern, but the transparency is there. But this second part of the bill is very important and very time sensitive, to where we can tell those employees, the 220 that are affected, hey, we've got this to where you can start work, and we can have you with working with our students so we don't jeopardize that. So I definitely urge you to support the bill, even if you may have some hesitations on one particular part. Thank you.
What purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Smith, arise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor and may debate the bill.
In listening to both sides of the argument and listening to the various parts of the bill, I come from a place that I'm very familiar with this discipline part of the bill specifically. Being a former board member of the LEA that I represent, I'm well versed in the school discipline policy. I served on the discipline committee for the Board of Education. One of the things that was mentioned earlier was that school boards have local discretion. This bill takes it way further than that. The General Assembly does not need to be involved in determining what local school policy is as it relates to discipline. In my district, before I became a school board member, I was a middle school social studies teacher. And as a middle school social studies teacher in an alternative school setting, the alternative school was set up just for this reason, so that you did not have to long-term suspend a child over something that is minor or repetitive. Suspending long-term for these types of infractions damages and injures that child even further. And we spoke earlier on another bill about this should be about children. Well, this bill is just that. This bill should be about children. What is in the best interest of that child? And a long-term suspension for what you wore to school that day or you're having a bad day and you said something you shouldn't have said to the wrong teacher, that in and of itself, in my humble opinion, is a complete and total disservice to our children. We talk about virtual schools. And we talk, again, virtual schools are an opportunity to use that tool, since we have it, as an opportunity to continue educating that child and not have to long-term suspend them. If you don't understand this, please try. Local discretion is what we all always espouse to. And all of a sudden, we want to take local discretion away, and we want to be big government, and we want to tell local LEAs how to run their school systems. I do not think that either side of the aisle wants that. So as we stand here today and we talk about the first part of this bill, and I understand the second part is a good thing, I believe that it is in our best interest to vote this bill down and work on the issue for the teachers in a separate bill, because at the end of the day, we have to take into consideration issues like cultural identifiable behavior. I was speaking to a Hispanic friend of mine who spoke to me with regard to culturally identifiable behavior in his culture. And in his culture, children are taught not to look you in the eye when they're addressing an adult. That behavior can be seen as an adult, an authority, as being disrespectful, because you won't look at me when I'm talking to you. You know how we can do? Well, that can be seen as disrespectful if that child chooses not to look at you. Well, that could be a cultural thing. And we've misinterpreted his cultural upbringing as disrespect. So this is way deeper than us coming up with some broad brush to paint this picture. And I think we're doing a disservice to our children by supporting this bill. I ask that you not support this bill.
What purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Terry, arise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To ask any of the bill sponsors a quick question.
Is this on section one or two?
The disciplinary section.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to the lady from Forsyth?
Please do, Mr. Speaker.
He yields.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Representative Torbett, as I listen to the discussion, one thing bothers me about the subjectivity of some of the language. And I'd like to ask if there is a formula within DPI or any place where education is regulated that determines the total number of long-term or short-term suspensions that might lead to a student's total expulsion from the schools.
I have no idea. I didn't use that information to address this bill or any findings within the bill, but thank you for the question.
Follow-up, please, sir.
Will the gentleman yield to an additional question?
Within that regard, then, how would we determine for those children who perhaps may be permanently expelled because they've had a line of or a list of suspensions that have been subjective? How would we determine, and then where do we send those children?
That's the blessing of this bill, is some of the fears I hear coming from the other side of the aisle are just that. They're just fears, because we're not mandating them do anything. We're not telling them when to long-term or short-term. We're not telling them anything along those lines. All we're saying is that you as a local group need to get together, determine what's going to happen, what line needs to be stepped across before this happens, and then share that with the people that might be crossing those lines, the student population and parents and law, everybody involved, in an effort to better educate what the rules of the road are, for that's my terminology. So we're not mandating any disciplinary action. We're allowing the locals to do what's best for not only the student that might be breaking a rule, but also the other students that one student might be impacting. So they're the ones that are best there to make that determination, not us. So I agree with almost everything everyone said. We're just not doing that. We're not mandating anything.
Thank you very much. May I speak to the bill?
The lady has the floor. May debate the bill.
I'd simply like to say that because I have no idea where this will lead children who find themselves being expelled permanently from school because their behavior has been subjected to subjectivity. I think it needs a few fixes, so I can't support it. Thank you so much.
What purpose does the gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, arise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To speak to the bill and then to see if Representative Torbett would yield for a question.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Okay, colleagues, I must be reading a separate bill from you all because some of the comments I've heard about this bill don't seem to jive with the actual verbiage of the bill. We talk about local control being dictated to by the state legislature. Well, if you read the bill, on page 1, lines 10 through 11 says, local boards of education in consultation with teachers, school-based administrators, parents, and local law enforcement agencies shall adopt. The way I read that means there's 115 LEAs that'll determine locally, not by us, but locally, what their parameters for behavior and discipline will be. So I was confused by Representative Smith's comments about local control on that one. It would seem to me that we are simply requiring local boards of education to come up with a code of behavior that is relevant to their individual LEA. And every stakeholder is involved. Then the bill goes on to require them to make sure that everybody is aware of what that code is. We talked about suspension. Well, as I read suspension in here, it says also at the bottom of line page 1, lines 33 to the top of page 2, board policy shall minimize the use of long-term suspension and expulsion by restricting the availability of long-term suspension or expulsion to those violations deemed to be serious violations of the board's code of student conduct that either threatens the safety of students, staff, school visitors, or threatens to substantially disrupt the educational environment. I don't see how wearing a t-shirt with a slogan on it would fall into that category that would require or mandate a long-term suspension.
Speaker, what purpose does the gentleman from Scotland, Representative Pierce, arise?
Has to be a sponsor, the presenter at the present time, a question.
Would the gentleman from Rowan yield to the gentleman from Scotland?
Sure.
He yields.
Thank you. Do not our boards already have that authority? Why are we mandating once again? You might be the wrong person to ask the question, but do they not already have that authority to do just what you just said? Do they not already have that authority?
Well, thank you for the question, and I couldn't answer that for all 115. I can tell you that mine has but I think Representative Pierce, what this bill does is seeks to give uniformity of the parameters by which the local boards can develop their codes of conduct. We're simply, in this bill, as I read it, simply sets the parameters on those things. It doesn't tell them specifically what they have to do or what they can and can't do other than the limits on things like the long-term suspension. But they submit this. They are supposed to submit their plans after they've developed them to DPI. It's a collaborative effort of all stakeholders involved in each one. The comments made about disabilities and dress codes, I just don't think they're relevant here because it doesn't really pertain to this bill. That would be an argument that you would pose if you had a conflict with that local LEA's code of conduct. So if Representative Torbett would yield.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to the gentleman from Rowan?
Yes, sir, Mr. Speaker.
He yields.
Representative Torbett, am I reading this wrong? Am I totally off base on my interpretation of this bill as providing parameters to local LEAs to develop a code of conduct with all their stakeholders?
Your interpretation was better than my presentation.
Oh, thank you, sir.
What purpose does the gentleman from Orange, Representative Meyer, arise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor. May debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to comment on three things that have been said on the floor already. First, I want to speak to the section of the bill that Representative Elmore talked about, which is related to the North Carolina virtual public school situation. I appreciate Representative Elmore stepping into the breach on that and trying to address that issue through the legislation. My understanding from the Office of State Human Resources is that today they met with the Department of Public Instruction and gave guidance to the Department of Public Instruction of a way to address that hiring issue for the virtual public school without having to have it addressed in legislation. So it's not bad. What Representative Elmore is doing is good, but it's not necessary if DPI will follow up on the guidance they got from Office of State Human Resources today. Second thing, there was a question about how does this relate to students with disabilities. There are some protections in federal law for students with disabilities related to suspensions that may be impacted by what their disability is. But those protections come after the fact. If a student is suspended, then their parent or the student can request a hearing, a declaration hearing, to see whether the suspension was impacted by their disability or not, and at that hearing it can be decided that maybe they shouldn't have been suspended or they should have a different disciplinary consequence. But because it's after the fact, there's still discretion up to the principal to decide whether to suspend that student in the first place or not. And so that's not something that is automatically protected by federal law. But the main thing that I want to address is the concerns that have been expressed primarily by my black colleagues today are not based on fear, they are based on fact. I'm going to go back to the most recent data that I had on my computer, and I'm going to tell you it's from 2015, so it's a couple years ago, but it's not that long ago. In 2015, black students received 47% of the suspensions from North Carolina public schools. They were suspended at a rate 2.6 times higher than their percentage of the population in our schools. If you look at all the reasons that black students were suspended, 48% of those suspensions came from three categories. Those three categories are the three categories in our student code of conduct that are the most likely to be interpreted subjectively. They are disrespect, insubordination, and disruptive behavior. Now, none of us would say that you should not be able to suspend a student for disrespect, insubordination, or disruptive behavior. If a student is doing those things, they could get suspended for that. But those three things are subjective in definition. Whether you were disrespectful or not depends on how the teacher and the principal interpret it. I'll give you an example. I had a student who came to me who was suspended when I was still working in the schools, and he came to me because he said, "Mr. Meyer, I just got sent home and I don't understand why I got suspended." I said, "What happened?" And he told me he had been in a conflict with his teacher, and his teacher had asked him a question, and then he had answered the question, and after he answered the question, the teacher said, "That's disrespectful. Get out of here. Go see the principal." I said, "Well, that's because it was a rhetorical question." He said, "Mr. Meyer, what's a rhetorical question?" I said, "It's a question that she was asking you to think about, not to answer. So when you answered it, she perceived you to be disrespectful because you weren't supposed to answer that question." He said, "Mr. Meyer, in my household, if an adult asked me a question, I had better answer it. I thought it was a stupid question, but I have been raised to answer a question if an adult asks it to me." The teacher thought it was disrespectful. Student didn't know why he had to answer it, but thought that he better answer it or else he would be disrespectful if he didn't answer it. And so he got sent home for a subjective interpretation of what's respectful in the classroom. When this reality is happening to one population at 2.6 times their percentage of the population, it is not fear, it is facts. And so the fact that the bill takes away, and so Representative Warren asked, where is it in the bill? It takes away the guardrail that this legislature put in place in 2011 that said for these minor infractions, you cannot have a long-term suspension or expulsion. For major infractions, including the ones I just listed, you can still have those long-term suspensions and expulsions. But we don't need to go backwards and have students get suspended for things like bad language and dress code We need those kids in school. We need them learning. We need them in classrooms. When they misbehave, we need to teach them how to behave better. We need teachers that engage them. We need principals that work with them. We need parents that will help them stay in our classrooms. And in the wake of having passed the monumental bill of Raise the Age, taking us forward on juvenile justice, we should not go backwards on school discipline. And that's what this bill does, and that's why we're opposing it. It is not fear, it is facts.
What purpose does the gentleman from Richmond, Representative Brewer, arise?
To speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor, may debate the bill.
Y'all know I spent most of my last years of career as a district court judge, and I spent it primarily in juvenile court. And 3 years ago at our chief's meeting, the former Chief Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court, Mark Martin, came to us and said, we need to start making a difference in how we treat juvenile cases that come into our system. And he proposed the School Criminal Justice Partnership to us. And over the last 2 to 3 years, we've worked hard across the state. Chief Judge Jay Corpening of New Hanover County has been particularly instrumental in doing this. And the school systems, law enforcement, and the court system have worked together to make sure that these acts of minor discipline do not end up in the court system. It is not the place to handle it. By removing these examples, you open the possibility, once again, for students to be charged with disorderly conduct, with a criminal offense, and be brought into the criminal justice system. It's simply not the place to deal with these minor infractions. There are better ways of doing it, and what we're doing with Raise the Age and the School Justice Partnership programs are giving us that better way to deal with it. Most of these kids, when they act up, they don't have a good example at home. And long-term suspending these kids does not help them in the least. If you had asked me this 12, 15 years ago in the court system, I might have had a different approach. But when I sit there and see it every day, there's a better way. And this bill, I'm afraid, moves us back from that better way. We don't need to be doing this, especially since we've raised the age. We're taking in all types of kids for really serious offenses into the juvenile system. And the resources are simply not there to go back and potentially add this to that mix. The schools are a better way to do it. My wife retired a couple of years ago as a school teacher. She worked in South Carolina for a year or so and decided she was going to come back part-time into North Carolina schools. And she's going back into a school to teach, very much like where Representative Smith talked about him teaching. And when she saw this legislation, when we talked about it, she said, we don't need to go backwards. These are the type of kids we're going to be dealing with. We can do more to help them in school than we can out of school. And Representative Myers is right. I've seen it firsthand. It disproportionately targets children of color. And it's time that we stop doing that and proceed on a better way. And with changing this provision in the bill, I can't support the bill.
What purpose does the gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Montgomery, arise?
To ask Representative Torbert a question.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to the gentleman from Forsyth?
Absolutely, Mr. Speaker. Yields. Representative Torbert, I originally asked for an announcement to make the argument that Representative Meyer made, but I think he did a masterful job of articulating the point, particularly around disciplinary action. As such, hearing the concerns that have come forward around that area and the disproportionate potential impact that returning to this policy does in light of historical fact, are you willing to displace this bill today, remove that portion, and let us vote on this without this tomorrow?
No, sir, I'm not, actually, because there's none of the language that I've heard in this bill. There's concerns and fears what might happen, but none of that is in this bill. There's nothing in the bill that distinguishes anything. There's nothing in the bill that mandates a school unit to do this, that, or the other. It basically, all it does is enhances disciplinary in the school, gives the people, what I've heard today, it sounds like it's fascinating that people in the schools are doing tyrannical things, and they're not. They're trying to benefit not only the kid that needs help, but also the kid that needs help impacts, which is the rest of the student body. But none of that that I've heard talked about is actually language in this bill. If you actually take the time, and I'm not suggesting you haven't, but if you go through a slow read of the bill, you'll basically just see that all the actions are derived at the local level. All the outcomes are derived at the local level. And there is no mention of any kind of differential of any student, shape, form, or fashion. It is the discipline of the child that is being looked at, and involving the parent to the best of our ability is the candy in this bill is try to bring the parent back onto the school property. But thank you for your question.
Follow up, Mr. Speaker.
Would the gentleman from Gaston yield to an additional question?
Certainly, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Torbett, I think you're correct in the sense that the bill itself does not specifically say this population or that population. I think where the concern is that this restores language that had been taken away in the past. And so the question is, why are we restoring that language when the facts say clearly that it does have a disproportionate impact on the local level when they actually engage in these actions?
What the bill basically says is no different than what's going on today, other than the use of foul language, for example, could actually raise to a level higher than just using foul language. Today, if a school system decided to do a long-term suspension, which is also not a proponent in this bill, this bill says nothing about increasing long-term suspensions. It says nothing about increasing short-term suspensions. Nothing. But it says if it rises to that serious of nature, then they could do that. So all I'm saying is that protects the unit, because if you were that person down there and they were a student was berating you with foul language and you reported that and you were concerned, you had fear from that, and you reported that to your administrator and they said, well, did he do anything except use foul language? I said, no, all he did was use foul language. The rules today say we can't do anything other than just we can't long-term suspend or short-term, because that's the foul language. All I'm saying is that we're not telling you must. We're saying you have the option to.
Debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor and may debate the bill.
Colleagues, I just want to say that I think that the arguments have been made pretty clear in reference to the issue, and I think it is a fact that in the bill itself, we don't have that explicit language that states that calls out a particular group of people. But at the end of the day, if we look across the state of North Carolina and we look at the data that has already been stated, that when these practices have been in place before, it has an adverse impact. And so the question today is, by voting to restore this language, we're stating that we're okay with the adverse impact that has been shown by data and statistics. And it's not saying that we're explicitly saying that, but we're saying that by practice and what happens in our school systems, that we're okay with that happening. And if you're okay with that, then vote yes to move this forward. If you're not, then let's try to figure it out.
Members, we're going to proceed with debate, but the chair wishes to let you know the chair has been notified that a member will object to third. So this bill, should it pass second, will be back on the floor tomorrow. What purpose does the lady from Orange, Representative Insko, arise?
To ask Representative Torbett a question.
Does the gentleman from Gaston yield to the lady from Orange?
I'll do my very best, yield. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Torbett, on page 2, line 6, it talks about minor violations and serious violations. Is there anywhere in the statutes that those terms are defined in any way?
Thank you for the question. That's above my educational pay grade, Mr. Speaker. If I could, if it would be humanly possible to ask assistance from either Representative Elmore or Representative Horn on the specifics of the gentle lady's question.
Would the lady from Orange wish to direct her question to Representative Elmore of Wilkes?
Either. Representative Elmore.
Representative Insko, I'm sorry, I spaced out for a minute. Will you please repeat your question?
Well, this section of the bill talks about minor violations and serious violations, and I'm just curious if there's anywhere that those two terms are defined or described in any way.
There is some state board policy that deals with it, but much of this happens at the local level, what they determine is a minor offense and what is a major offense. There is reporting that's turned in. The data that Representative Meyer from Chapel Hill told you, we collect that data, and they have to submit that in, and things that they ask is an act resulting in an in-school suspension, out-of-school suspension, expulsion, the assignment to an alternative school, and reported as a consequence or an action on the behaviors in an incident. So they have to document what that is that puts that in and then report it. Now, there are some things you have to document if you use corporal punishment.
Mr. Speaker.
I mean, is this...
I just wanted to know that if there was any guidance about what a minor violation was or a serious violation was so that we might have some standards. It sounds like that that this is totally at the discretion of the local board, that it would vary from a district to district. It would vary from year to year, depending who the principal was, depending on who the school board was, that minor violations and serious violations might change at the local level, but they would certainly vary. And I'm just asking if that's correct.
How it currently is happening is the local is determining that based on federal guidance and what's in the state statutes, which even before these changes is very broad. Now, there is guidance from the School Boards Association. They allow them to talk with them to try to create consistencies in the policies. But part of this bill is allowing those policies to be sent to DPI so we know what they are. We are seeing the tail end effect of them, but we have no clue what the actual policies are unless we go to each individual LEA and see it. So it will address what you're asking.
Would the gentleman yield to a follow-up question?
Does the gentleman from Wilkes yield to an additional question from Lake
Yes.
Orange? He yields.
So could you, I heard you speak about this a little bit earlier, could you say more about the process? So the school boards lay out their policy and then they send them to DPI, all 113 or whatever we have now?
Yes.
And so those are reviewed for consistency, and anyone who's an outlier, is there anything done with outliers?
Current law, that does not happen. What this bill is doing, to give you a process of what it's doing, to just kind of go step by step so you can understand it. By the year 2020, a school board will have to develop a policy. They'll have to make sure that it aligns with federal law to take care of the students with disability, et cetera. Consult with law enforcement to make sure that they see it too, and that's more from a school safety perspective. Then that will be submitted to DPI, where they're all kept together. These statistics on what happened to the children with the long-term expulsions, et cetera, that doesn't change. That still happens. So we're finally going to see, okay, let's pick out an LEA. I won't name anybody's because I don't want to offend them or anything. But LEA town, LEA town, we're finally going to see, okay, their expulsions are high in comparison to everybody else. Well, let's pull their actual policies and see what is the policy that is causing these kids to be expelled at such high rates. Right now, we don't have that capability because we're just looking at the information on what the expulsions, et cetera, are without the information on what's the policy that's causing it. So actually, this will help prevent a lot of the problems that have been raised because we're actually collecting more information so we can see these trends and see, get to the root of the problem. Not just talk about the problem, but get to the root of it. Does that help?
Thank you very much. I appreciate the information to speak on the bill.
Lady has the floor. May debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, that sounds like far in the future. Those data are already available right now. We can see what the expulsion data, suspension data is right now, the long term, the short term.
as I read this, I think that probably in 2011 someone said, no one knows what a minor violation is or what a serious violation is. We need to give some examples, and that's exactly what they are, examples of conduct that would be deemed a serious violation. And that they would then not be involved. They would not necessarily be calls of they would not cause suspension. And then it says the principal may, however, in his or her discretion, determine that aggravating circumstances justify treating a minor violation as a serious violation. The language that we have right here, with removing the scored out words, if you leave the words in, the principal has all the discretion they need right now. With the language, the old language, and it provides an example. It provides some examples of what we mean here in this body by serious violations and minor violations. So I think the language is critical for us to leave it alone, just like it is. We can still do exactly the same thing that you've all talked about. Those data are already available right now. We can look right now and see which districts have high suspensions, and we can go in and look at their policies and how they're applying those policies. So I hope that we will take the opportunity to leave the old language in and change this section.
What purpose does the gentleman from Brunswick, Representative Eiler, arise?
Inquiry, the chair. The
gentleman may state his inquiry.
Pursuant to Rule 19.1A, since the rules chair is in the speaker's chair, isn't the vice chair of the rules committee eligible to move the previous question or to do the right thing, as someone might say?
Yes, sir. One of the vice chairs of rules would be empowered to do that. The handler of the bill would be empowered to do that, and the majority leader would be empowered to do that. What purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, arise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor, may debate the bill.
North Carolina school children don't need less education, they need more education. And suspended students don't receive more education. There are some students and some incidences where students do need to be suspended from school, but those need to be serious and treated as such and not grouped in with minor violations that have been stricken from this bill. We heard earlier one of the representatives say that a student who violates dress code could be long-term suspended from school. That reminds me of when I was the vice chair of Guilford County School Board about 11 years ago, and I voted to put in what we call standard mode of dress, or SMART. At that time, I was a huge advocate of SMART. I thought that it was a panacea, that it was going to bring calm into the schools. And I did an interview on one of the local television stations, and the other person that they interviewed was my daughter, who was a high school freshman at the time. She said, "My daddy does not know what he's talking about. SMART is not going to work, and it will not have the effects that he thinks it's going to have." I stand here as a proud father now to say my daughter was correct. It did not have the intended effect. And to hear us debating a bill and potentially voting for a bill that would strike the possibilities of students not being suspended for standard mode of dress is a little bit frightening. We open the doors that some students may be long-term suspended for not wearing standard mode of dress. Let me close with this. Just this past April, there was a school system in North Carolina that polled the teachers and asked the teachers, "Do you think we should have standard mode of dress?" 75% of the middle school teachers said no. 80% of the high school teachers said we should not have that. The reasons that the teachers gave was, one, it impedes learning, that they actually become fashion police rather than teachers. Two, it impedes parental involvement, because parents don't like to be called from their jobs to talk about what their child has on at school when the parent has done the very best they can to get the child dressed and sent to school. And third, it said it prevented community support of the schools. This was not Guilford County schools. On April 2nd of 2019, Lexington City school teachers made that decision.
Mr. Speaker.
What purpose does the gentleman from Gaston...
Could I ask the gentleman a question, sir?
Would the gentleman from Guilford yield to the gentleman from Gaston?
Yes, sir.
Would it surprise you to know that everything you just expounded, I agree with wholeheartedly, and this bill provides for that, that all those findings and determinations would be determined there at that local level with the parents, with the students, and then disseminated out so everyone understood what they were before any disciplinary action could be enacted. So I just want to make sure, I wondered if you understood that what you're saying is exactly how this bill would address it.
So my answer to that is yes, it would surprise me because that specific language was stricken from the bill.
What purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Smith, arise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill a second time.
Okay. I don't see Representative Warren. He mentioned me in his comments, so I wanted to mention him in mine. The point is absolutely on page 2. He's talking about when you read the bill. In page 2, where the lines are stricken, that's the part that you don't read if you choose to skip over it. And that is the part, that's the most egregious part of this bill that we're discussing. The language that was there to protect students from the discretion of the principal being using minor violations to create it into a major violation. That was the whole purpose of that language. So removing that language does not mean you gloss over it and pretend that it's not there. It's not erased. It's a line through, which means you still need to read what was there, because what's not being said is what's at stake here. Secondly, the representative continues to use the term fear. Well, the fear is not the fear that he describes. The fear is the fear of lawsuits that he described. That's what this is about. Well, if you are doing something that you're afraid you're going to get sued for, I suggest you don't do it. It's really that simple. So for me, there's no fear. It's about truth, as was stated earlier. The fear, again, is at the local level. Now, having been the vice chairman of my school board as well, we did not operate in the atmosphere of fear. We did what, if you're doing the right thing for children, you'd have nothing to be afraid of. You have nothing to be worried about as it relates to a lawsuit. This makes absolutely no sense to me. And in Wayne County, what we did, along with our judges, our sheriff, law enforcement, and our school board, we formed a partnership agreement. And in that partnership agreement, we clearly defined what was a suspendable offense as it relates to our school system. We worked together locally to resolve that issue. We did not need the legislature to come in and tell us how to run our school system. We did just fine.
Mr. Speaker.
Does the gentleman from Gaston...
I was curious if the gentleman would yield for a quick question.
Does the gentleman from Wayne yield to the gentleman from Gaston?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative. Would it also surprise you that the very thing, I agree with you wholeheartedly, that you're talking about, you did in your district when you were the assistant, I think you said on the Board of Education.
Vice Chairman,
thank you very much. The very same thing you're talking about is exactly what this bill says to do. Exactly, almost verbatim. But I just wondered if you had acknowledge that. Thank you.
I will acknowledge that to the point that it attempts to do that, but I will not acknowledge it from the perspective of what it does do. It does eliminate those protections from the students that we all know are the most vulnerable in our school system. By drawing through those lines, you just open Pandora's box on principals who are, there are rogue principals in our state. Let's be honest, and those superintendents who would use this, because it is now an open door, they don't have to fear lawsuits and things of that nature. And I really and truly believe that it is in our best interest to leave that language in this bill in order for it to be wholeheartedly given the opportunity to be supported. But the way it is written right now, there's no way I can support this bill.
What purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, arise?
Be recognized for a motion.
Gentleman has the floor, may make his motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the previous question.
The gentleman from Wayne has moved the previous question. The question before the House is, should the previous question be called and the question be put? Those favoring the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. With 64 voting in the affirmative and 48 in the negative, the previous question has been called. Per the rule on the call-in of the previous question, the minority leader is recognized to speak for a time up to 3 minutes on this motion.
Mr. Speaker, if I could yield that time to Representative Meyer from Orange County.
The gentleman from Orange is recognized to speak up to 3 minutes on this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, the three lines that are in question here were put into statute by this body in 2011 with a unanimous vote. That means if you were in this chamber in 2011, you voted to put those lines into statute. It was done as part of a bipartisan working group that was led by former Representative Stamm and former Representative Glazier. They worked with the court system, the school systems, advocates, and put in place what at the time was considered to be the nation's model for how to decrease suspensions and expulsions, which was a hallmark of North Carolina's efforts to increase academic achievement by keeping our kids in class more of the time. That's what we're fighting over. But the subcontext of today's debate also needs to be noted. We don't often debate race in these halls because it is one of the most difficult things to talk about in our society. And in the creation of this bill and bringing forth of it with the language intact that we've been debating, what you see is how our society gets divided over issues of race. And I simply wish that we could have conversations across racial lines, not just party, across racial lines, to have a better understanding over why something like this is so important to certain members of our state. Thank you.
Members, normally we would go immediately to the majority leader. However, the chair thinks the gentleman from Mecklenburg is seeking recognition for an administrative matter. Is that your intent, sir?
That is correct, sir. I wish to be recorded as a no on the motion to reconsider.
The gentleman from Mecklenburg will be recorded as having voted no on the motion for the previous question. What purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Majeed, arise?
For the same purpose, sir.
The gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Majeed, will be recorded as having voted no on the call of the previous question. Representative Bale, do you desire your 3 minutes of time?
I yield my time to Representative Elmore, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Elmore of Wilkes is recognized to speak up to 3 minutes on the House Committee's substitute to Senate Bill 295.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To solve a problem, you've got to figure out why. And right now we have some language that's in the statute that you're very concerned about, but we really don't know the policies that are put forth. We have no clue. We're sitting here in this chamber saying, well, we stand for this, we stand for this, and it's on a piece of paper, because we don't truly analyze the policies that that language is supposed to go into. Yes, we admit there's problems because we're getting reporting on how many possessions of weapons, how many possessions of firearms, possessions of controlled substances, all the stuff that has to be reported, and even suspensions, etc. But why is it happening? If you don't try to find out why, you can't fix the problem. You can sit here and talk political words and use political statements to get people riled up, but it does nothing more than be in this room or sit in a statute. By us seeing what the policies actually are, giving the locals the empowerment that he was talking about a minute ago, to where we say, hey, you work in this realm, we're just going to have you report it, to where we can see exactly what you're doing. You can't violate federal law. You can't have a principal that goes rogue. You have to work in these parameters to develop your policies. Then we see the results. What is happening? Do you have more suspensions than normal? Well, why is that? We can go back to the policy and see. At this point, that's not fitting together. On the second part of the bill, the representative mentioned my name and said he talked with the Office of Human Resources, and there's no need. The Office of Human Resources, through Temporary Solutions, is the one that is worried about liability and sent out the notices to the teachers that they were going to be laid off. So, of course, they're trying to fix the problem because they're the ones that started it in the beginning. We were just in a meeting where the state board attorney says, without trying to stop the liability issue and put a time frame on it, this will stop the bleeding, so the state of North Carolina will not get sued. So the time sensitivity on these employees getting their contracts settled, it is time sensitive. It's something that we might can fix, but without this liability window that we give a time frame to it to where it can actually get done, we're putting in jeopardy the state and also these employees. That's a scary thing, and it is time sensitive. As I said, it starts Monday. So the argument that that is not a legitimate concern, as I said in rules, Representative Jackson was in there. The right hand wasn't talking to the left, and then the toe got involved. You're going to hear a different story from the right hand, the left hand, and the toe. And they're going to say that other people are at fault. But the reality of it is we need to protect the state's liability with a time limit, give them a time frame to where they can get that problem fixed, to where we don't have that problem spring semester, and we can get this resolved so our teachers can be employed, these 220 that are in jeopardy. And yes, it is time sensitive. So I would hate for you to vote against this bill when there's 220 employees and the kids they affect are affected. And also, if you really want to talk about solving a problem, this gets to the why. And we can figure out the why, what's causing it, and then address it. Transparency is a good thing. Vote for the bill. Thank you.
Your time has expired. The question before the House is the passage of the House Committee substitute to Senate Bill 295. Those favoring passage will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 62 voted in the affirmative and 52 voted in the negative. The House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 295 has passed its second reading. Third reading has been objected to by the gentleman from Wake, and the bill will remain on the calendar. Representative Sain is recognized to send forward a conference report. The clerk will read.
To the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the conferees appointed to resolve the difference between the Senate and the House of Representatives on House Bill 217, a bill to be entitled an act to make miscellaneous and technical changes to the statutes and relating to the Department of Information Technology, amend various statutes relating to the state energy cybersecurity, and amend various statutes related to the emergency telephone service and the 911 board. The Senate and the local government committee substitute adopt 626-19, submit the following report. The House and the Senate agree to the following amendments to the Senate State and Local Government Committee substitute adopt 626-19, and the House concurs in the committee substitute as amended. The conferees recommend that the Senate and the House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conferees report, August 6, 2019. Conferees for the Senate, Senator Heiss, Chair, Senators Perry and Newton. Conferees for the House of Representatives, Representative Sain, Chair, Representatives Brendan Jones and Kyle Hall.
Representative Sain, it's the Chair's intent to place this conference report on the calendar pursuant to Rule 44D for tomorrow. Representative Torbett is recognized to send forward a conference report. The clerk will read.
House Bill 206 to the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Speaker The conferees were appointed to resolve the difference between the Senate and House of Representatives on House Bill 206, a bill to be entitled an act to make changes to laws related to transportation. Senate Transportation Committee substitute adopt 62619. Senate Finance Committee substitute adopt 62819. Fifth edition in Gross 7, 8, 19 submit the following report. The House and the Senate agree to the following amendment to the Senate Transportation Committee substitute adopted 62619. Senate Finance Committee substitute adopt 62819. Fifth edition in Gross 7, 8, 19 and the House concurs in the Senate Committee substitute as amended. Delete the entire Senate Transportation Committee substitute adopt 62619. Senate Finance Committee substitute adopt 62819. Fifth edition in Gross 7, 8, 19 and substitute the attached proposed conference committee substitute H206-PCCS-40511-SU-5. The conferees recommend that the Senate and the House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conferees approve report August 6, 2019. Conference for the Senate. Senator McInnes, Chair. Senators Davis, Rabin, and Alexander. Conferees for the House of Representatives. Representative Torbett, Chair. Representatives Eiler, Shepard, and Presnell.
Representative Torbett, pursuant to Rule 44D, it's the Chair's intent to place this conference report on the calendar for consideration tomorrow.
That's wonderful. Thank you. I was going to ask the reading clerk, Mr. Speaker, if he could have repeated that, but I was that's fine. We'll hear that tomorrow. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Notices and announcements. What purpose does the gentleman from Johnston, Representative Strickland, arise?
The House Ag Committee will be meeting tomorrow in room 643 of the LOB building at 1 o'clock. We will continue our discussion about the Milk Commission.
What purpose does the lady from Pitt, Representative Smith, arise?
Point of personal privilege.
The lady has the floor, may speak up to 3 minutes to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you. I would just like to take this moment to make sure that we acknowledge the life and the legacy of Miss Toni Morrison. She died on yesterday, 88 years old. She was the first black woman to receive the Nobel Prize in Literature and one of our nation's most distinguished storytellers. So I wanted to make sure we acknowledged her. Thank you.
What purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, arise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor. May speak up to 3 minutes to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, our son Graham would have been 32 years old today. He was a bright, brilliant young man. You know, when he was a kid, his brother and sister, their mom and dad, or my wife, did most of the taking care of them. But when he came along, some things had changed in our situation to the extent that I took care of Graham most of the time when he was little, in the mornings at least. Got to the point where if Renee and Samuel needed something, they called for Mama. If Graham needed something, he called for Daddy. He was a bright person with a promising future, a lot of potential. But for reasons I won't discuss here, on April 12th, 2015, he chose to end his life. This is hard for me. It's harder for Tammy. She's having a rough time today, so I let her have the afternoon off. I mean, after all, she's the one that spent 18 and a half hours in labor with him. So I understand her having a real hard time today. But I said something in his funeral that I just feel led to repeat today. In a crowd this size, no matter how together it looks like you may have it, no matter how well things may seem to be to other people for you, and this many people gathered in a place, there's a good chance there's somebody here today who's thought about doing the same thing. And I just want to say what I wish I'd had a chance to say to him. If that's something that you're thinking about, you're going through struggles and it's just that tough that You're thinking, well, nobody cares. It won't matter to anybody. I might as well end it all. Don't believe that. Talk to somebody. Get some help because you have no idea the lifelong pain you're going to give to those who love you if you go through with that. So if that's somebody here today in the sound of my voice that's thinking about that, talk to somebody and get some help. And if you don't know somebody who cares, if you don't know somebody can help, come talk to me. I'll do whatever I can to help you. Your life and the potential for your future, no matter what you're facing right now, is worth the trouble and worth the risk of talking to somebody and get some help. There are people who care. Thank you.
Members, the chair will announce that the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House will meet 5 minutes after we adjourn today. We will be considering Senate Bill 86, the Small Business Health Care Act. It's the only bill that will be on the calendar for consideration today. What purpose does the gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warner, rise?
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor. May make his announcement.
State and local government will meet tomorrow at 10 a.m. in room 1228 to discuss the bill and vote on HB 431.
Further notices or announcements? If not, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Wednesday, August the 7th at 4 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Torbett moves, seconded by Representative Pittman, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Wednesday, August 7th at 4 o'clock p.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1. Those favoring the motion will say aye. Opposed will say no. The ayes have it, and the House stands adjourned.
Representative Murphy, Dobson, Lambeth, Potts, and White are recognized to send forth the Health Committee report, Senate Bill 361, Health Care Expansion Act of 2019, favorable House Committee sub, unfavorable Senate Committee sub, and re-referred. The Senate Committee substitute will be placed on the unfavorable calendar, whereas the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 361 will be re-referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. On motion of the chair, House Bill 822, short title Comprehensive Behavioral Health Plan, is withdrawn from the calendar 36B and re-referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, Operations of the House. Special message from the Senate, Senate Chamber, August 6, 2019. Mr. Speaker, pursuant to the messages from the Senate on July 23, 2019, informing the House of Representatives that the Senate fails to concur in Senate Bill 217, House Committee Substitute, third edition, a bill to be entitled an act to numerically realign superior and district court districts with prosecutorial districts, the President pro tempore appoints Senator Britt Chair, Senator Daniel, Senator Newton, on the part of the Senate to confer with a like committee appointed by your honorable body to the end that the differences arising may be resolved. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate. That Senate message is noted. The Speaker appoints the following conferees for Senate Bill 217, Change Superior Court and District Court Numbers. Representative Destin Hall, Chair, Representative Stevens, Representative Davis. The Senate will be notified by a special message. Special message from the Senate, Senate Chamber, August 6, 2019. Mr. Speaker, pursuant to your message received on July 10, 2019, that the House of Representatives failed to concur in House Bill 449, Senate Committee Substitute, Fourth Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to authorize the Division of Motor Vehicles to produce a Keeping the Lights On special registration plate and a POW/MIA Bring Them Home special registration plate. The President pro tempore appoints Senator Rabin, Chair, Senator McGinnis, Senator Harrington, on the part of the Senate to confer with a like committee appointed by your honorable body to the end that the differences arising may be resolved. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate. That message is noted. Special message from the Senate, Senate Chamber, August 6, 2019. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate failed to concur in Senate Bill 356, House Committee Substitute Number 2, 4th Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to direct that a portion of the proceeds from the sale of certain state property be transferred to the Clean Water Management Trust Fund and the Parks and Recreation Trust Fund, and to modify various laws relating to the State Surplus Property Agency and the sale of seized motor vehicles, and requests conferees. The President pro tempore appoints Senator Wells Chair, Senator Brown, Senator Raven on the part of the Senate confer with a like committee appointed by your honorable body to the end that the differences arising may be resolved respectfully. Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate. That message is noted. And the final Senate message is noted. Special message from the Senate, Senate Chamber, August 6, 2019. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with information that the Senate failed to concur in Senate Bill 199, House Committee Substitute Number 2, 7th Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to protect children from sexual abuse by increasing the prosecutorial options for delayed reports of child abuse, to expand the duty of the report of child abuse to protect children from online predators, to extend the statute of limitations for a civil action for child sexual abuse so that the plaintiff has until age 38 to commence on action, and to require training on sexual child abuse, sex trafficking for school personnel. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate. And a motion of the Chair, House Bill 822, short title Comprehensive Behavioral Health Plan, is withdrawn from the Committee on Rules, Counter and Operations of the House, and recommitted to the calendar 36B. Representative Lewis is recognized to send forth the Rules, Counter and Operations of the House Committee report. Senate Bill 86, Small Business Health Care Act, favorable House Committee Sub Number 2, unfavorable House Committee Sub Number 1. House Committee Sub Number 1 will be placed on the unfavorable calendar, whereas House Committee Substitute Number 2 for Senate Bill 86 will be calendar pursuant to Rule 36B for the 7th.